Welcome. Nice to see you all. Today is the 3rd of May, 2011. I've been away for a long time. It's nice to be back. It was a very rewarding experience and a very ungrounding one all at the same time. All of that travel. Today is a pretty dynamic day with regard to the planets, coincidentally, because three planets have moved today, shifted signs. Rahu has moved into Scorpio. Ketu has moved into Taurus, because Scorpio and Taurus are directly opposite each other. And Rahu and Ketu are always 180 degrees apart. And Mars has moved into Aries, into his own sign. Recently, that we've had last week we had five planets in Pisces, which is pretty rare. Don't see that very often. Which is very good for meditation and a mystical communion with the higher powers that be. I don't know if any of you have experienced that. And shortly, all planets will be in Aries, so that will be somewhat intense, I think. I looked at, somebody sent me some contacts with websites with regard to this comet that's been zipping around the place. They call it a comet. They don't call it a comet. Some call it Aileron, I think they call it, or Nibiru. There's one that they sent, and this guy did an analysis of it. And all of these major events that have happened recently have had the Earth lined up with this comet. In Vedic astrology, there's a whole science to studying comets. Now, I don't claim to know it because I haven't studied it, but it's a whole wing of Vedic astrology. And much can be predicted with comets. Now, they're not favorable, they're unfavorable. They cause great calamity. And that's exactly what we've been seeing with the Japan, but before that, Chilean earthquake, and then New Zealand. There's been several of them. And anyway, those, as best as can be told, this seems to be the effective cause in the sky for some of these events. And again, it lines up sometime in September, I think. Kalindi's mother was here yesterday. She's telling me it's again in mid-May this month. But that's not what this guy said on his analysis of it. So I don't know. Anyway, we see that we are in very great times of upheaval. I did a presentation in Los Angeles on, I did one called Sex, Soulmates and Your Stars. That's now up on the website if you're interested in listening to that. That was standing room only. That one went over pretty good. Then I did a presentation on Vedic astrology and earth changes. That's also up on the website. So if you're interested. Then I did one other one too that's up there, but those are the two main ones. So you can listen to those on the podcast on the website if you wish to. Because I didn't want to cover it again tonight.
What about earth change? That's what the poles, they think? Poles are shifting?
Well,
yeah, that is.
I don't think they're shifting permanently. But anyway, maybe it'll bring about a rise in consciousness with any luck. And we'll begin to see our transitory, ephemeral existence that we really cannot control at all. I mean, the Japan situation was absolutely devastating. Now you see it. Now you don't. An hour later, we watched some of the video the other night on TV. It was 1 hour between from the beginning of the earthquake until the tsunamis hit. It was an hour and everything was gone. Devastated. So, you know, I don't ever recommend or encourage people to live in fear. Never. What's the point? But we need to realize that this is a transitory existence. And seemingly it's becoming more dangerous lately. So the closer you are to God and the more you have an active, dynamic communion with God, then the less worry there is, the less need there is for fear. So, I mean, God can take care of everything. And ultimately, we'll die. Every last one of us will die. As sure as I'm sitting here, I'll bet you a fiver. Every last one of us will come to an end. Some sooner, some later. So we already know that. We actually don't believe that. In the Mahabharata, Yamaraj, the deva in charge of death and dying, who's actually the father of Yudhishthira, one of the five Pandavas, Arjuna's brother, he posed as a Brahmin. He came down to earth and he questioned Yudhishthira. He said, "What is the single most amazing thing here on earth with humans? What is the single most unbelievable situation?" And Yudhishthira says, "Oh, well, that's easy. That here all the humans are and they watch everybody around them dying. People they don't know, people they do know, people close to them. But not yet one of them believes they'll die. No one actually is convinced that it'll happen to them. That is the single most amazing thing." And Yamaraj says, "Yes, you're correct. That is it." So, or, you know, it won't happen today. So, it's okay. It won't happen today. And it certainly won't happen tomorrow. So, we're okay. Yeah. 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 Well, your situation is a little different, my dear, or it was a little bit different because you had a medical situation, mm-hmm. Right? But that's improved now. Mm. But this is it. Life is transitory, so we need to. We don't have to walk around, you know, in a state of morbidity. But we must know that. You know, we want to be prepared. We want to know we're ready to go. And whatever we focus on at death, that's where we'll go. Okay, so if we have some planets in your birth chart in Taurus or Scorpio, well, we might be tested in the next year and a half because Rahu and Ketu will be there for a year and a half. That's how long they last in a sign. 18 months. So, I probably should write something about it, but I haven't got around to it yet.
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Is Scorpio to do with marriage?
Scorpio is not so much to do with marriage. Libra is to do with marriage. Scorpio is many things. Scorpio is death. Scorpio is death, rebirth. It's reinvention of self. Scorpio is often connected to sexuality. So.
Then what's Taurus?
Taurus would be more about relationships because it's ruled by Venus. Scorpio is also a sense of unworthiness, insecurity, people who are caught up in victimization or martyrdom. In behaviors of victimization, or where they're being victimized, or they take a position of victim or martyr. And Scorpio is also a kind of an attitude of insufficiency, inadequacy, and self-sabotage. Scorpio shows up very strongly in these kinds of things. Taurus is beauty and love and finances and plants in the earth and wealth and anything to do with Venus, because it's ruled by Venus. So it's not so much, if you don't have any planets in Taurus or Scorpio, it's kind of a non-issue. If you have planets there, then maybe it can be challenging. But Rahu and Ketu, generally speaking, their job is to bring the shadow up for review. So anything, to whatever extent you are not telling yourself the truth about any area of your life, and or you're denying the truth, and you're pretending something is this way, in reality, it's that way. That's Rahu and Ketu's job. Oh, well, let me take you and have you look over here now. I don't want to look at that. No, it's time now. It can be like that. Rahu will strip away illusion and Ketu will implode it. Ketu is volcanic. And things blow up. We met three people who had been in the tsunami in Thailand. That tsunami that hit Thailand back in December of 2004. I did three charts of three people that were involved in that tsunami. And every single one of them had been in a K2 period in their birth chart. One gentleman was in charge of a hotel, and he was up on the fourth floor, did he say, of the hotel, and he was looking down watching the water come in, and 90 people who worked for him were all killed, all being washed away. He witnessed this. So he had moved to inland, into this other place in Thailand where Clindy and I were visiting in Koh Samui. And we were driving in the car with him, and he got a phone call, and he picked up the phone, and he was speaking Thai, which we don't speak. And he starts laughing. He goes, "No, no, 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 no," and he's speaking, you know, "No, no, 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 no." Then he gets off the phone, and he's explaining to us that that was his former boss who owned the hotel, who's trying to lure him back. Because the guy had rebuilt the hotel. "Please come back and manage the hotel." "No, no, 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 not coming back." That's what he was saying. Anyway.
You said Rahu was moving into Scorpio.
Yes.
So if you have three planets in Scorpio, that could be very challenging.
It might be. And or it could be very liberating. Rahu will free, you know, Rahu works like this. He will shackle you, or he will free you from your shackles. Depends what you're ready for. So if something isn't serving you, then he will shackle you. He will increase the bondage. So you can see it, perhaps. You know, he'll tighten the shackles, tighten the screws, so to speak. So maybe you'll wake up and see. But if you see, and you're... See, the thing with planets is this. This is the most important thing I can tell you about planets. Kalindi has realized this for her own self, in a very organic manner. I didn't have to tell her, she figured it out. That's what I mean by that. when you have negative planets or negative influences of planets, and you push against them, you fight them, you lose, pretty much. You know, because you're talking about a universal force. So the best way to handle it is to effectively cut a deal with the planet, is to act in cooperation with circumstance. And you know, Clindy and I have a K2 thing going on right now in our marriage, in our marriage chart, which can be very challenging. So I said to her, you want to come to America? And you get to go to New York and Los Angeles and San Diego and Portland, Oregon. Nope, thank you very much. I don't want to go. Now, most people think she's nuts because she doesn't want to take advantage of this. But she's a very clever girl. Because she knows, and she explained that if you cooperate with the planet and we create a intentional separation, that will then diffuse what the planet could create for us in the marriage, in our life. So the pressure that K2 may put on the marriage is diffused by us going through a voluntary separation for a month. Now, I'm not saying it's the be-all and end-all, but you're working with the planet as opposed to clinging desperately to the situation. That's what I mean by cooperating with the planet. Sometimes, you know, I'm not talking about she and I right now, I'm just talking in general. Sometimes you see with people in relationships that they do separate, and somebody just goes away for, I don't know, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. That could be the best thing. And rather than cling desperately and, no, don't go, I don't want you to go, it might be the best thing. And it can refresh and renew. It's like the reset button on the computer. You know, hit the reset button. You know, reboot. Oh, gee, all the problems just sort of disappeared once I hit the reboot. I don't say it always works like that, but sometimes that can be a good approach. So what you want to do with planets is you want to think like that. If something is pulling you in a certain direction, there's usually a benefit involved, even though the benefit may not be apparent. And sometimes it's worth testing it out, even though it's not exactly what you want. And when we are in difficult times or trying times and we're being tested, that is also the time that we can make, we can have great breakthroughs in our lives. It's really all about, bottom line, it's all about what? It's all about control. What's all about control? Everything. Everything. What do you mean everything? The only reason you're here is because you've got an ego. That's why you're here. You and all the little other egomaniacs, no offense, running around trying to control everything, everybody, and every circumstance. How's that going for you, by the way? That's what we're doing here. We're trying to control because we want to get our needs met. In some ways, you're doing pretty good. In other ways, maybe not. So ultimately, what we're trying to get to from a spiritual perspective is not maximum control. It's maximum surrender. True spirituality is in giving up control, giving up the ego, and surrendering completely to God and the divine plan. Nahyasya karichidrajan puman veda viditsitam. O king, no one knows the plan of the Lord. I love that quote. It's about surrendering. And you say, no, I don't want to surrender. I don't want... The greatest joy you'll ever experience is in complete surrender. That is the opposite of control. So that's usually what's happening when you're under a lot of duress. I mean, even we can look at this economic collapse that we've gone through, many countries have gone through, especially this country. We were exerting so much control, we were out of control. Isn't it? Were we not out of control with all our controlling of property and buying and selling and, you know. I mean, I rarely met an Irish person that didn't own a property in Hungary and in France. All of a sudden, everybody's a property owner. So then everything fell apart. And we lost control. And we can say, oh, that was a terrible thing. Yeah, in some ways it was. But in other ways, it wasn't. Because there needed to be a rebalancing, a reset. Because it was out of control. You know, when humans try to control something, you have to understand they control from this little spot on earth. And here we sit and we look up, okay, I'm going to control this, this, and this. But the person who has the true perspective is up here looking down. That's generally not us. You know, so if you can raise your consciousness to a much higher place and look down, then you will see there's not so much need for control, and you'll let go, and you'll know that you can't really control anything anyway. So that might be a way to look at planetary challenges. All right, any comments? Anybody have any wonderful experiences they want to share with us?
Just when you started the IBS throat.
Aditya Hridaya, yeah. You started chanting that one?
Yeah, every Sunday.
Oh, very good. Very nice.
That's pretty good because the day I chant, that was Sunday, then I have a little bit of trouble with my job, with my boss, and I thought that, I said, what have happened? They're gonna say, Marcus, not come back to the world, and I chant on Sunday, right, and then I'm gonna have to chant, you have to chant three times that one, so,
yeah.
Three times.
Mm-hmm. And it's the Aditya Hridayam.
How does it go?
No, it's long, very long. We chanted it in Jaipur up at that sun temple with Ron and Annika, right? Let him finish and then we'll talk about it.
And then Monday morning, I was I put my phone, Hari Om mantra, and then my boss called me, hey, he said, hi, Marcus, how are you doing? I said, oh, good. Anyway, I'm coming down here, right? So we're going to have a go cork and this and that. And I so much energy. It just seems like he just say, all good. And everything was good. Because this mantra is good for,
yes,
like for your relationship with your, your seniors or the
correct
people you work for, then your colleagues and... And it's just like a victory over a whole lot of other things.
Correct. No, it's to the sun. Aditya is the sun. The Hridaya means heart. The heart of the sun. When Ram was on earth, Ram and Sita. And Sita was kidnapped by Ravan. We've talked about the story many times. And Hanuman, the half-man, half-monkey, Vanara is what he is, found Sita in Lanka. She was being held hostage there, so to speak, because Ravan wanted to enjoy her. She was Ram's wife. Ram is an incarnation of Vishnu, God, who was on earth during the Treta Yuga, the Silver Age. We are now in the Iron Age, Kali Yuga. And they had fought a long battle, and they had defeated most of Ravan's warriors, champions, and the only person that hadn't been defeated yet was Ravan himself, the big demon. So it was the morning of the battle where Ram would fight Ravan. And before going out to the battlefield, and they were on chariots drawn by horses and had arrows, but the arrows were consecrated with mantras. So they weren't just regular arrows. They could create wonderful effects or terrible effects using mantra with the arrow. And Vasishtha was Agastya, the guru, one of the gurus of Ram, came onto the battlefield or just before they went out, and he said, "This is the mantra you should chant because it will give you victory." You chant it to the sun, and Ram had been born in the dynasty of the sun. All the incarnations of Vishnu or God take birth through various planetary dynasties. And Ram took birth in the solar or Suryavansh solar dynasty, where Krishna took birth in the Chandravansh, the lunar dynasty. So Krishna is very connected to the moon energy. Ram is connected to sun energy. So he was given a mantra in connection with his dynastic tradition, which is to the sun god. And if you want victory, as Markandeya is saying, in anything, then you pray to the sun. And sun is also representative of employers, bosses, authority figures, people in charge, governments, politicians, kings, queens, to some extent bankers, corporate heads. I mean, you know, father. Son is the father figure. Right. So it is a very long, it goes for pages, this mantra. It's not a short mantra. I'm not going to roll it off here and give it to you because it's quite long and extensive.
The short version of
it. Well, there's always a short version.
The YouTube and you can hear the whole mantra.
Yeah.
I will tell you what side. Yeah.
And can you download just the
one? Oh, sure. Yes. Of course. Yeah, on YouTube, everything is possible. Now with the internet, everything is possible.
Very powerful.
We went to India in 2006, I think. And we went to Jaipur, and outside of Jaipur, there's the sun temple way, way, way up top of this hill. You got to walk in the heat. And we did that. Kalindi and I and my friend Ron and his wife, Monica. And we went up to the top of the sun temple and we sat down with the Aditya Hridaya mantra and we chanted the whole thing in front of the altar of the sun god.
It says Mount Abu. Which is there?
Mount
Abu.
No.
Oh.
No. And then the next year we went to, we thought we moved to America, and Kalindi got her gemology degree, gemology certificate. So I think that was maybe a blessing from the austerity done to the sun god, the penance. Okay, anybody? Any other great stories you want to share with us about how wonderfully Spirit is acting in your life?
May I ask you a question?
Yes.
Vanora, you said in relation to Hanuman? What is that?
Vanara.
Vanara.
They call Hanuman the monkey god, but they're not monkeys. They're not. In our day and age, we have no concept. So what we say, it's half man, half monkey. It isn't. It's a Vanara. It's a particular species. They aren't here anymore. You can't find them. So Hanuman was a scholar of all the Vedas. That's not a monkey. He spoke many, many languages. And his father was Vayu, the wind god. So he could leap from India across the channel to Lanka in one leap. He could, you know, theoretically fly through the air without wings. Monkeys can fly through the air, as we know, from limb to limb, from tree to tree. But this is way beyond that. But he was a highly intelligent scholar and spiritual being. Hanuman is an incarnation of Shiva. So he was a Vanara, not just a monkey man. To say that reduces it to such an extent that, you know, they say Ram in the monkey army. Not really. It's Vanara. So, but we have no other way to explain it.
That's really fascinating. I didn't know anything.
Yeah. It's far different than what we think it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these were the days when the gods would come and go to the earth. They would come to the earth and they would interact with man, the celestials. They don't do that anymore. In case you hadn't noticed, they don't come here. You know, we'd probably arrest them and throw them in a prison and interrogate them and waterboard them and who knows what else we might do, you know, in our zeal to find out the truth. We're very unpredictable. We're an unpredictable lot. It's hard to say what we might do, you know. Okay, you know, we can even get along with people of other races on this planet. One to speak is somebody who's, you know, has superhuman powers. What's going to happen to that guy once they lasso him with their ropes? Okay, I'm just going to read a few verses from the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Ananyash chintayanto mam ye jana pariupasate tesham nityabhiyuktanam yoga kshemam vaham yaham. This is Krishna speaking, and he's speaking to Arjuna, and he's speaking about the science of yoga. This is verse 22, 9th chapter. He says, but those who worship me with devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack, and I preserve what they have. I carry what they lack, and I preserve what they have. Whatever you have, that's of value. Whatever you think you have, that's valuable. It might be your beauty. It might be your talent. It might be your wealth. It might be a possession. Could be anything. there's oftentimes a fear that we will lose it, that it will go away. One of the things we really do not want to lose is our youth. But it goes away. We don't want to lose our beauty. There are many beautiful faces here in this room. We don't want to lose our beauty. We don't want to lose our talent. We don't want to lose our presence of mind. So many things. So, Krishna is saying here that if you meditate, if you worship me with devotion, in other words, if you have a strong connection to God, simply put, and you stay close to God, and you make God the central figure in your life, then there's less chance of losing what is valuable to you. Meditating on my transcendental form, I was talking to a client today and I was saying, do you have a relationship with God? He says, yeah. And I said, well, how do you see God? And he says, well, you know, that's God all around me. So he sees God in the creation, which is the Vishwarupa, the universal form. That's God. It's God's energy. But that's not always the... If you can see God like that, wonderful. But it's not always the easiest way. It's not always easy to have a relationship with the universe or an amorphous form. So that's why he's saying here, if you meditate on my transcendental form, which is a human-like form, then it'll be easier to devote yourself. To them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. So we talked about preserving what you have, and carry what you lack means, well, whatever you're missing, whatever you don't have, he'll provide it for you. He'll bring that into your life. So your life will be full, balanced, replete, complete. Then, a couple of verses later, he says, Yanti deva vrata devan, pitrin yanti pitri vrata, bhutani yanti bhute jya, yanti mad yajino pima. Which means, those who worship demigods, in other words, higher beings, celestial beings, you could also take them to be angels or archangels. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. Those who worship ancestors will go to the ancestors, and those who worship me will live with me. Now, in our society, we don't think much about a verse like that. It mostly would escape us. But it's an interesting perspective. There are many people in India or different countries like that where it's a monotheistic society. You worship different gods and devas or devis, because they can provide things, and they can provide things for you fairly quickly. But if you focus too much on that, then that is where you'll go when you leave this plane. And that won't get you out of the material world. It won't get you off the wheel of samsara, repeated birth and death. Now, we perhaps don't think much about that, but some people do. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among ghosts and spirits. Well, what's an example of that? Voodoo? And in Mexico and places like that, they have santeria. And these are religions or religious practices that worship dark spirits or entities or disembodied entities. And generally it's to place curses on people, to force people to do things or not to do things. And India too, they have this. This is called tamoguna religion. It's religion in the mode of ignorance when you worship these kinds of beings. So that goes on even now. Africa too, they have different ones that they engage in. Those who worship the ancestors go to the ancestors. What is an ancestor based culture? Native American.
Well, a lot of indigenous cultures are ancestors.
Correct. So you, in the Native American, you go to the happy hunting ground where all the ancestors are, and the buffalo.
But it's not possible to acknowledge ancestors and honor them and still, and also God would inform them.
Yes, it is, but if the ancestors are the ultimate goal, that's the point.
Mm-hmm.
It is possible to acknowledge, to honor the ancestors, and ancestors can be honored. But we're not talking about honoring them, we're talking about worshiping them and making them the goal. Then you'll go there. Yeah. Well, many of us want to get away from the family. No offense that we were raised in, but...
I think you're right, because even in India, like when you, somebody, your really loved one died, they said, okay, they said, okay, like we, they don't say that, don't cry, it's okay if you want to cry, but they say, okay, you know, let them go, then even sometimes don't remember them much, like, you know, don't call them, let them go, right? So called concentrate on more meditation from, yes, you remember their legacy or whatever, the lesson, all the good things. But don't actually say, oh, yeah, come on, like, no, come on, why did you leave me? Come down, like, that.
Yeah.
It's
okay. Just let them go. Mm-hmm. And they say, life should be, let's move on.
Yeah, but I just heard a lot recently about consulting them to some extent, that we come from life that go back and back and back and back. And that if you feel a little bit uncertain about something in your present situation, that you can ask for help from ancestors.
Yeah, you can.
And I'm extremely conscious of that at the moment. I don't know why, but I don't know why.
Well, maybe they're appearing to you now, or maybe you're attuned to the wavelength.
You know, really turn up though. That doesn't mean I'm going to go and end up with them.
No, unless that's what you plan to do, then you won't.
It's sort of more, the intention is to clear obstacles in past lines.
Well, that's a different consciousness, though.
Yeah.
That's not being so reliant or manipulated by them.
Isn't that possible that they are coming into her space? That they're invading new space?
Well, maybe they're not invading if she's trying to work through old ancestral behavioral family patterns. And if she's working to clear those, as in the sins of the father are visited upon the children. I went on a walkabout with an Aboriginal elder who's no longer with us in up in the Kimberley in Western Australia. In the outback. And what they do when the Aborigines die is they move his family out of the village by night, and they relocate them in a whole other village. If they have a dwelling, they burn or dismantle that dwelling. They burn all of his possessions completely. So if that soul is attached to his residence, his family members, his possessions, that's all gone. Within 24 hours, it's gone. And they can't, therefore, that anything that soul can cling to and stick around and, you know, not move on, that was the idea. Yeah, they don't give them a chance to stick around. There's a method in that approach. Okay. Yeah.
So you know the way, like, there's like Radha and Krishna, and there's the Lakshmi and the Ganesh, and like then are they? Because Neva was saying like they're demigods, but I thought like Lakshmi was like the female form of a god. Not like I know Lakshmi is with Vishnu, so that's the personality.
Lakshmi is not technically a demigod. Lakshmi is the divine feminine energy of Vishnu. So Vishnu is the divine masculine, Lakshmi is the divine feminine. Lakshmi and Radha are the same energy manifested differently. So Radha is the divine feminine in the Krishna Leela, in the Krishna pastime, as Lakshmi is the divine feminine in the Vishnu pastime. They're not demigods.
Ganesh
is the son of Shiva, so effectively, yeah, he's a demigod. His job, but he's considered one of the higher ones, and his job is to remove obstacles. So, you know, it's nothing wrong with worshiping Ganesh and acknowledging Ganesh, but that's not your goal. That's what Ganesh shouldn't ultimately be your goal. See, strictly speaking, in Hinduism, they say you worship any of these deities and you'll go to Brahman. And that's not how it's technically seen according to Dvaita philosophy, which means you don't, whatever deity you worship, that's where you're going to go. So if you worship a demigod, you're going to end up, you know, wherever that demigod is. So it's different. It's not the same as...
Short term, so just remove those obstacles.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. You know, I might use a mop to clean a floor. But when I'm done using the mop, I set it down. It's functional. It's purposeful. I don't walk around always thinking about the mop. Okay. This next verse is a very, very famous verse. In fact, the next two verses. I always chant these before when I offer food on the altar, or before we eat, I like to chant these. They're quite well known. Patram pushpam phalam toyam. Yomi bhaktiya prayachati tadaham bhakti paritam ashnami prayatatmanaha. So Krishna says here, if one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. That's about as simple can be. So what's he saying here? He's saying, okay, maybe you have no money at all. Nothing. You can't make an elaborate offering that would cost thousands or millions of dollars. No problem. You can offer a leaf. Well, where am I going to get a leaf? Outside. A flower. Somebody brought these. Who brought these beautiful tulips? Thank you, Miriam. Miriam has offered flowers to the Lord this evening. Leaf of flower, fruit or water, anything. These things are readily available, even if you're poor. But not so much that, with love and devotion. with love. You do it out of love. He says, then I will accept it. So anything you offer, as simple as that, he'll accept. And the next verse, which really goes with it, is Yat Karoshi Yadashnasi Yaj Jehoshi Dadasi Yat Yat Tapasyasi Kaunteya Tat Kurushva Madarpanam. O son of Kunti, Arjuna's mother's name is Kunti. So he's talking about Arjuna. All that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering unto me. Well, what did he leave out there? All that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities, penances, sacrifices, you know, let's say you get up early in the morning, 5 o'clock, to do your prayers or your meditation or yoga. That's an austerity. Your body doesn't want to get out of bed at 5. Believe me, it doesn't. But yet you do. And you meditate and you pray. That's an austerity. Should be done as an offering. So whatever you do, just offer it to God. And then what happens? The next verse. In this way, you will be freed from all reactions to good and evil deeds. And by this principle of renunciation, you will be liberated and come to me. That's it right there. So I'll give you the essence. So before, you're working on your clients all day long. You say the prayer for each person. They come in. You offer it. So I say, excuse me, a minute and a half to meditate. That's what I do. You brought them here. You sort them out. I'm offering it to you. I'm going to get out of the way now and let you do your business. And I'm surrendering myself to you so that this person will get what they need. It's been that simple. Do the same thing before you eat, whatever you do. And then all the karma is removed. You know, it should be more complicated than that. But it isn't. It's simple. Anybody can do it. A little child does it happily. Go take that flower and offer it on the altar. Go offer that to God. That's what they do. Very simple. Very sweet. Okay, so let's do a little bit of meditation. All right. Close your eyes. Breathe, relax. And let go. Allow the stress, tension, fear, apprehension to drain from your body. Totally, completely relax. Breathe. And let go. Deeply, deeply relax. High above, envision a beautiful beam of radiant pearl white light coming down, down, all the way down, entering through the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, torso, arms and legs, out the bottom of your feet, into the earth below. Breathe, relax, and let go. see and feel yourself by means of this light, connected to the heavens above and grounded in the earth below. Relax. And let go. All right. You're in a beautiful clearing in a forest. You can smell the fragrances from various flowers carried by the breeze. You can hear the sounds from various birds and other animals. It's a gentle, warm breeze. It's a very pleasant place. Somebody comes from out of the trees and enters the clearing. Who is it? Do you know this person? Do you not know the person? What is their attitude as they appear and see you and approach you? What is their state of mind? They ask something of you. They ask you to do something, or they want something from you. What is it? Will you do it? Will you give it? How do you feel about what they have asked? What happens? What is the result? How does it change your relationship with this person? Continue until you've done all the steps in the meditation. When you have finished, slowly now return to consciousness, awakening, feeling refreshed, relaxed, and at peace. Okay.